You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee and Jamie Spence.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as we look back on 2019 with some memorable moments from the majors and other key events on the European Tour schedule. Tiger Woods might get a mention after being masterful at the Masters, and I'm sure we'll debate whether the golf or the singing of Shane Lowry impressed us most during open season. And we've an end-of-year chat with Tommy Fleetwood, who went oh so close to claiming the Race to Dubai title itself after ending a 22-month drought with a win last month at the Nedbank Golf Challenge.
Probably a little bit of relief, for sure. Consistently, I've been doing fine and I've been doing really good, but you're never satisfied unless you win. That joy and that feeling of winning was so nice to feel again.
That's all to come on a bumper Race to Dubai show. Well, I hope you've all had a great Christmas, but of course, Jamie and I, Jamie Spence, that is, recording this before Christmas.
Yes, we can't wait, can we?
What have you got me?
What do you mean? What, for you?
Yes, stately home?
Yeah, nothing, mate.
Understood, yeah.
Yes, nothing. But, sorry. What have you got me?
Same.
Same.
I feel we should keep it going.
Yeah.
Why ruin, previous good plans that we've had over the last 50-odd years?
I think there's too much gift-giving, I think, Robert. Too many presents.
In the old days, it was...
A bit curmudgeonly.
You sort of suck an orange and that was pretty much your Christmas present.
Yeah,
that was
it's just
it.
Nice everyone's getting together. My sister-in-law's coming over from Australia with her little one, so that's going to be lovely to see them. So it's just time for all the families to get together. What about you?
No, I'm looking forward to it, Jamie, and I'm looking forward to... post-Christmas, because then I'm thinking New Year, and then I'm thinking we're into 2020, and what a golf season it's going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much golf to look forward to. We've got the Middle East Swing just after Christmas, the South African Open being the first tournament of the year as well. That's always a big event. And it just gets bigger and bigger, working up towards the Masters in April, and onwards and upwards. We've got the Olympics this year. We've got the Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits. And it's
what a condensed schedule it is
this year.
Everybody.
Yeah, it is when the Olympics come around. It sort of condenses everything. So, yeah, there's... lots to look forward to. Yeah,
a lot of big-time golf coming your way, no doubt about that, through the season. And we are going to be joined later in the show by US broadcaster Bob Bubka. He'll talk to us on all things 2019 and, of course, a lot of other subjects, hot topics that he's got ready to come out. And they will come out when you talk to Bob. He won't be able to hold himself back.
No, I can't wait. Let's talk to Bob. Yeah. He's great.
And there's plenty from the wonderful Tommy Fleetwood, who chats about his year in golf, and he looks ahead to both the 2020 Ryder Cup and, of course, the Tokyo Olympics, among other things, where they say, Jamie, it's going to be roasting hot.
Yeah, it's Japanese summer over there, so they're talking about having tents at every other hole where they're going to be able to cool people down. You see them at various sporting events. We have those big fans. Mm. It's going to be something to deal with there, just north of Tokyo in Kasumigaseki Golf Club. I've played that course. It's a really good course, but they say it's going to be roasting hot there. So it's something for the players to deal with. But they're used to it, aren't they?
They could put the shorts on.
I'm not sure they're allowed to put their shorts on.
Oh, they must review that situation, surely.
I would hope so.
If it's that, if it's 35 degrees and high humidity, they've got to play in shorts. There's people doing a 100-metre sprint in shorts.
Well, if they're not allowed to play in shorts, as you said to me, the pole vaulter should have to do it in long trousers.
Completely.
I'd like to watch that.
I'd like to see that, yeah. We get to choose the trousers, though.
Mm.
Plaid.
White. Checked.
Big flares.
Yeah, big flare.
Heavy tweed.
Don't trip over.
Heavy tweed. Okay, we haven't spoken to Tommy Fleetwood on the Race to Dubai since he got back to winning ways in November with that brilliant playoff victory over Marcus Shinault at the Nedbank Golf Challenge, hosted, of course, by Gary Player. So that's where Dan Roebuck began when he spoke to Tommy before Christmas.
Tommy, thanks for joining us on the Race to Dubai show. We are going to start at the end, so to speak, because it came good for you in South Africa. How big a win was that for you personally? Because long time between drinks, nearly 2 years between that win and your previous success.
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me. It's a nice place to start and a nice memory to look back on. And I think, there was no shine away from it. It had been a long time since I'd won an event. And I'd gone close a few times, and there was times like either an event where I felt like I might have let one slip, or events where somebody had just simply played better. And those are kind of the easier ones to take, if you like. But it was great for me in South Africa because, it was the first time I'd really done really well in one of those final series events. First win in however long it had been. I kind of lost track by then. It's clearly a massive paycheck, but a massive event as well. And I think just no matter how well you're doing, which I've been doing consistently, I've been doing fine and I've been doing really good, but you're never satisfied unless you win. That putt going in the playoff was just, there's a lot of satisfaction. There's a lot of, I wouldn't say, probably a little bit of relief for sure. Finally got over the line again. But I think just that joy and that feeling of winning was so, so nice to feel again.
Did you think you had a chance to win going into that final round? You were six shots off the pace. Obviously, Lee Westwood the previous year had come from way off the pace. Is it that type of tournament? Did you set yourself up? Did you think, do you know what, it's doable around here?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I wasn't out of it, and I think Saturday was a little bit of a disappointing day, but I felt like, you know, there was this little stretch in the middle on Saturday where I missed a couple of putts, and the round could have been different on a very difficult day. But I do remember coming in, you know, there was Tomo there, my swing coach, and Finno McCaddy, and then Tom, who's one of my closest friends, and he does my stats for me, and he'd come out for a couple of weeks, and he actually said the words, "We can just do what Lee Westwood did last year." And like, we'd come in and we felt fine. We did some, I actually practiced my putting that night before dinner. I went there and I was like the last one on the putting green, and we just felt like it didn't actually go very well, but we felt like we'd done something and tried to move on from the Saturday and move into the Sunday. And it was just, it was one of them days where I made a couple of good up and downs early on, and you know, I never really felt about getting in contention or trying to win the tournament, because I was a little bit of a long way back, and a good day would have been fine. But all of a sudden after 10 holes, I was leading after an amazing start. So then it was all of a sudden you're trying to post a score. So things can change quickly, and I think that was just another example of that. And I think the best thing I did all day, though, even though that I knew I had a chance with 7-8 holes to go, I think I just kept sitting shot after shot and just kept going. And again, when you haven't won for a long time and you have examples of what you've done right or wrong, I think that can only help, and that definitely helped me going into that round. I knew that to just keep going really and see whatever score I shot, and you know, I didn't play with the finish line in sight. I just played to try and set the best score I could.
Speaking of things changing quickly, I watched an interview with you during Sun City, and you were suggesting that the previous year you'd put a bit of pressure on yourself to try and retain the Race to Dubai title, and maybe you played a bit too much in trying to defend that crown. But suddenly, you're in a position going into Dubai where you could win it. I mean, you seem very pumped for that. And obviously in Dubai, you had another fantastic event, but just came up short.
Yeah, again, you know, you learn from experiences. And I think when I set out in 2017 was clearly a breakout year for me, and I ended up winning the Race to Dubai, which is still one of the proudest, if not the proudest moments of my career. And in 2018, I didn't really set it out as a goal at the start of the year. And all of a sudden, just because it became like a realistic possibility, I put too much pressure on myself. I tried to push too hard for it. Got a little bit moody at the end of the year. You know, like, things that don't frustrate me normally frustrated me. And I think looking back, I had that to go on. Like, I knew that I wasn't going to let that happen again in whatever situation I faced. And I think that definitely helped me. I won in South Africa. And as soon as you win that event, all of a sudden people turn to saying, oh, you know, the Race to Dubai is alive now. And certain, you know, you're one of the people that can win it. And obviously, I knew that, and it's such a great, great feeling when going through that final week, the DP World, where you're preparing to potentially try and win the Race to Dubai, and every single thing you do counts. And it is such an amazing feeling, because it really does keep you motivated all the way going through the end of the year. And, you know, all of a sudden you've got two things to think about rather than just one, trying to win the tournament. And I loved it, and I had 2 years of experience to go on. I could take those past experiences and bit with me, and I felt great all week, really. I mean, in the end, it wasn't to be, but you know, I felt absolutely fine, and it was a good pressure. I didn't put too much pressure on myself. I didn't like try and force it. I just tried to play golf, and it was another great experience, really. And definitely coming down the stretch on that Sunday, I absolutely loved it. It was John's time, and John, you know, played the best golf that week, and that's just one of those examples of somebody playing better than you in that week.
When you reflect on 2019, was that, you know, the best moment for you in South Africa?
Yeah, I'd say there was a couple when I look back. Winning, absolutely. The back nine of the Open on Saturday was one of the highlights, just the way I played and the way I felt like I felt and handled myself. And there was the chip shot, like the pitch shot on 18 on the Sunday of DP World, which, you know, was pretty much shot of the week and under the circumstances. And, you know, just kind of, you hit some shots now and again where there's a lot of work gone into them. And I know there was like two or three highlights that definitely made the year when you look back.
Well, we will hear more from Tommy later in the show, but, you know, you can understand why he's delighted. The drought's gone, Jamie. The questions, the self-doubt's gone. He's back on the winning trail.
Well, yeah, that's right. He's not won for quite a long time, but listen, he's still winning plenty, isn't he? He's won, what is it now, five on the European Tour. He's contended in majors as well. He's had a terrific Ryder Cup. I count that as a win, personally, going 4-1 at the Ryder Cup. Runner-up in the Open Championship this year. Shot 63 round Shinnecock as well.
He's just a good player, isn't he?
He's just a terrific player. Yeah. So a win's going to happen. And I think if you set yourself out, like he was saying, if you set yourself out saying, I'm going to really target this event or this event, it's very difficult to achieve that.
I agree.
You've just got to let them come to you. And this, yeah, is what happened. It came, yeah, to him.
I agree.
And suddenly had a good chance to win the race to Dubai as well.
Yeah, well played, Tommy Fleetwood. And it was a terrific win down in South Africa, no doubt about that. Now, before we introduce Bob Bupka, we've both chosen moments from the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai that we want to talk about again. And I know you love a bit of short game, Jamie. And there's one shot in particular you want to talk about. The second last shot.
Well, there's a lot of shots, to be honest with you. They got, on the European Tour website, they got Jon Rahm's 20 shots of the year. And one of them was a bunker shot on 11, where he had a go at the green, actually. He played a great bunker shot. That was a good shot. But the shot I want to talk about is a shot they didn't include, which was his bunker shot on 18. He had to get up and down to win. Otherwise, he'd have been in a playoff with Fleetwood. So, what
just
a shot. I've played a lot of golf with you. You're a terrific bunker player. And it was the circumstance. It was a 9 out of 10 difficulty shot to get it within about 4 feet. He said, I wasn't actually thinking about the water, but it was in his mind, the water. He knew if he just got that a little bit too much, it was downslope all the way. He was at the back of the bunker. He had to carry at least 12, 13 yards to get it onto the edge of the green. It was downhill all the way. The greens were running at 13. So under that circumstance, to hit it 4 feet short, how he left it short, I do not know. But under that pressure, what a shot. I mean, listen, I'm privileged to walk around with these players for a number of years now, and the brilliant becomes commonplace.
Yes.
You see a lot of brilliance.
That's right.
But then when you see something like that and other shots as well,
context is important.
Well, absolutely.
Because if he misses the putt, if he twitches the four-footer, all of a sudden the bunker shot doesn't have the relevance it had.
Yeah, but
I know it's the same shot, but
the nerve required
to
keep the speed up through that sand.
Yeah, for sure.
With the loft on it, just to get that. He couldn't get any spin. He couldn't spin it.
No.
And that's how they normally play these bunker shots. You know, get the spin off. You can take the speed off it. He knew this ball was going to release off the downslope, and he just played it beautifully. Seve-esque.
It was Seve-esque.
Brilliant. And by the way, Fleetwood played a terrific chip shot as well there, but it was off the grass, short of the green.
Yeah.
And the other shot I want to talk about there, again, which took my breath away, was Rory's, I think, first day. It was 3-wood.
Yeah.
I think it was 282 he had all up, but it was uphill into the breeze. I think he calculated about 290-odd.
Yeah, he said the breeze was off the left. If he hit his normal draw...
I'm telling you, what a shot. He said it was his shot of the year.
That was a flush.
I'm glad he said that, because I was sort of wowing about it. And,
sure.
You know, and couldn't believe it. And then when he said that was my shot of the year, I was like, oh...
3-wood.
Took my breath away. 3-wood.
18.
Up into the stratosphere, into the breeze. Just pitched it like a 7-iron and just killed it. Just went up to about 4 feet, knocked it in for 3. Honestly, it was incredible.
And it was closely mirrored by Jon Rahm the next day, who hit a 5-wood from about 265 yards.
They pushed the tee up.
Yeah.
They pushed the tee up. It doesn't necessarily make it an easier driving goal, actually. It makes it narrower. And Rahm hit it straight down it.
Past the flag, and hold the putt.
And hold the putt.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
At what point did you think you'd be a good player?
But see, back in the day, that's a fearsome hole. It's a long, long, long par.
Sure.
Par 5, and they just made it look so easy. It's just, it's at those moments like that, you just have to...
But you want to see...
just wish everybody could stand there and watch that.
But you want to see people do things you can't do.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
That's why we watch professional sport. And
that's right.
Those two, certainly that week, did a lot of extraordinary things.
Yeah,
Rory's driving, by the way.
I think I could win 3 times off his tee shots a year.
Oh, up 9.
That eases the golf course.
9 is 500 yards uphill there in Dubai. He hit a drive and a little 9-iron first day. 340 yards he hit up there with the driver. Uphill, not downwind.
No, the hole.
Uphill, and he hit a little 9-iron. He could have smashed a wedge. He said, I was between wedge and 9-8, a little 9. And you go, you know, I could hit my best drive. I'm getting 5-iron in there. I've hit a long one.
And now there's a flag you can't get to.
Can't get close to it.
Of course you can't.
No. So
different game.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, different game. Great to watch. And how lucky we are on the European Tour.
You've got a pick there, but not quite golf-related, is it?
Well, I mean, it is. It is. We're going to sort of widen it out a little bit to moments from 2019. And I just really got a kick out of Eddie Pepperell running out of golf balls and having to DQ himself because he didn't have a golf ball left in his bag.
Yeah, you know you've had a bad day.
That was a few weeks back in Portugal.
Yeah, it's tin cup moment for Eddie.
Give me another
ball, caddy.
If you had to say, right, one person in this field today, without knowing what happened, one person in this field ran out of golf balls and had to DQ himself, you might have picked Eddie Pepperell.
It's possible.
Yeah, you might have picked Eddie for that.
It's possible that he's going to be belligerent enough and just go to that extreme, I'd have to say.
Yeah, very, very funny. And he's great to have around, really good player, and socially, media-wise, very active.
He's
very amusing.
Yeah, very, very funny.
Yeah, very funny.
Eddie, and I'm sure he looks back, sees a funny side.
Yeah.
I hope.
Oh, no. You know, all these things at the time you take a view, and when you go a little water under the bridge, a few months down the road, and you look back and you think, you know, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
That is pretty funny. Anything else you want to mention, Jamie?
Well, a couple of things. Firstly, Robert McIntyre, I think, has been a breath of fresh air on the European Tour.
It's agreed.
Some player. Seems to have been on every leaderboard that I've been out there on, so he's got a...
Rookie of the Year.
Let's hope he kicks on, because I like to see him in the Ryder Cup team, but been great to watch Robert McIntyre. And others, but the Turkish Airlines Open, the
in the floodlights.
In the floodlights.
Looked spectacular,
didn't it? Again, I was on course
it?
There, and I was wandering around my little shorts with my little white legs sticking
How
out.
Much did the temperature drop?
Incredible.
How much dew fell on the
dew,
grass?
Suddenly that 18th hole, which they're all reaching comfortably, suddenly wasn't that easy.
That's right.
It's quite narrow, but it was just so dramatic. And the crowd just stayed with it all around the 18th. It was absolutely packed. The atmosphere was buzzing. The players agreed to carry on and playing under lights is not easy. I think it's the future, actually, but it's not easy to define
gauging your line. With the light is difficult.
And also the reading of the greens is difficult.
That's right. And also, when you see a football match, it is super illuminated. To light up a golf hole as much as that, you can't get as much light onto it. So it's a little duller than you would like.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
the pictures on your telly were sensational.
Well, the depth perception on that little golf ball, obviously if you're kicking a huge football, it's a lot easier.
But it's a lot brighter.
Yeah, I thought it was a brilliant ending.
It looked amazing.
I mean, Hatton's golf there, because I followed Tyrrell and his driving was awful all day, really. But I'll tell you what, when he needed it...
The chip in.
He needed it. He drove the ball really well up 18 when he needed it. At the end of the day, when the wind was there, he grabbed it and he hit that chip in to stay in it. So... It was terrific.
The young Austrian was terrific as well.
He's impressed through the season, Matthias Schwab.
Yeah.
He's got better and better and better. He should have won that. He should have won that in regulation time. He played well enough. Just didn't quite hold the putts that day. Big learning curve for him, but what a season he's had.
Doing well, the Austrians, aren't they? Bernd Wiesberger back from injury in 2019. Two Rolex Series events.
Yeah, they are, yeah. They're,
tucked away.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very well for Bernd. Had a terrific season as well. Again, another player who you think I've written out a potential Ryder Cup team, and he's in it. He came and visited the team room in France.
Yes,
Bernd, and for a couple of days there, he was hovering around. So
he was doing a bit of work, wasn't he? A bit of media work.
Yeah,
I think.
That's got to inspire you, I would have thought.
Yeah.
So expect to see him in the team.
Well, let's hope he does, because he's off to an amazing start. So let's hope he gets in.
It's not all done and dusted.
No, it is not.
He's had a terrific start. He's
There's
right up
so
there
much
in the
golf,
points, but yeah. He's still got to play some golf, and of course the captain makes some picks as well.
Well, of course,
so
yeah.
Qualifying is not easy.
No, but a Christmas card to Padraig Harrington can't hurt.
I think a bit more than a card. Possibly
There's
a bit of fizz.
Huge box coming from Amazon.
Bit of fizz maybe or something.
Well, it certainly was a brilliant 2019, and to help us reflect some more and look ahead, of course, is renowned golf broadcaster all the way from the United States, Bob Bubka, who I must imagine has a huge smile on his face after Tiger Woods, who is Bob's love child after all, over all these years. He's Tiger's biggest fan, was a playing winning captain at the President's Cup. Welcome, Bob.
Hey, guys. Good to be with you.
So we're going to reflect on 2019, Bob, and you want to chat about the Open at Royal Portrush. Well, you were very taken with the Lowry victory, weren't you?
It was incredible. I mean, you talk about storybook. We arrived in Northern Ireland. The amount of excitement prior to the start of the event was incredible. I thought the golf course was just absolutely fantastic. Couldn't understand why it had been since 1952 that they had played there, and then got the shock of all shocks when Rory McIlroy doesn't make the cut. Thought, well, that's going to let a lot of air out of this balloon. But Shane Lowry came through in flying colors, and I would predict as we get ready to end 2019, Shane Lowry still celebrating.
Well, that was one of the moments of the year for me.
The scene in the pub with Beau.
Any British and Irish or European player, or maybe American, you dream of winning the Claret Jug.
Sure, yeah.
Dream of it. We've been on the putting greens many times, this putt to win the Open, all that. Everyone's been there. So Lowry did it in Portrush.
I know.
in front of the Irish crowd, and I think the way he celebrated has been brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely. That's what it means to him. And that the viral video that went out with him and Bo in the pub, and Shane standing on top of that chair with a black stuff in one hand and the claret jug in the other, yeah, singing the Fields of Athenry.
It was so funny.
Absolutely.
It was
fantastic.
It was fantastic. And you know, Bob mentioned it there, Rory's shock opening eight, which, you know, the golf world, the ground shook. And he,
who'd have thought it?
Who'd have thought it? You know, an iron off the tee and he hits out of bounds, he makes eight.
How was he feeling there, mate? How is he feeling? I mean,
nervous.
Obviously nervous. Hits it OB, takes eight. How, walking off that green, he must just think, what have I done?
Especially in
what
his lifetime, he never thought he'd play an Open Championship in his home country.
That's right.
He never thought that would happen. Then he's got the big opportunity. He's playing
as Bob said,
crowd expectation, out of bounds, eight. Oh dear, 65 in the second day. The crowd
came so close,
winning him over the line
came
to make the
so
cut.
Close to making a cut.
But the point I'm going to make is, with the disappointment of Rory not being in contention, Shane lifted it for the weekend. He carried that baton with aplomb.
From the front.
Yeah.
Tough to do.
Fantastic.
The way he played in those conditions, it was made for him, really. He loves playing in those conditions. But the enormity of what he was doing, he just seemed to relish and embrace. It didn't seem to bother him. No one really got that close to him on the last day. I think that obviously helped him a little bit. He's still got to go and play golf.
Yeah.
Anything could have happened to him on that last day.
It was a difficult day.
It's a tough course on a nice day. But when it's raining and windy, you can find all sorts of problems. But he didn't. He kept his head about him, and brilliant stuff.
And Bob, you're a massive Royal Portrush fan, I believe.
I really am. But what's ironic, I had an opportunity to spend some time with Shane Lowry at the match play, which was in Austin, Texas. And I said, Shane, what's it going to be like at Royal Portrush? He said, Bob, I guarantee you, you're going to have a good time. Little did he know, I may have had a good time. He had a great time. So he was excited about the Open Championship coming to Portrush, and boy, did he capitalize.
The Island of Ireland, that's how they were calling it that week. It was just extraordinary. And how about the crowds, Jamie?
Well, they love the golf over there.
Yes, they
do. I think there was a stat a few years ago that the most golfers per capita in any country in country of the world. So they just love them. I mean, you wouldn't believe that in the weather they've got, but they just absolutely adore their golf. We had the Irish Open at Lahinch earlier in the year when John Rahm won. That was heaving as well. What a great course.
That was a fantastic week.
Brilliant
as well.
Brilliant week as well. And so, yeah, for the Open Championship to go back to the Island of Ireland and for an Irish winner, it was like Disney World, wasn't it?
And Shane being from the south and Bo being from the north.
Fantastic, yeah.
It was extraordinary, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It was a beautiful thing.
It was. And, of course, the man who got closest to Shane Lowry in Northern Ireland was Tommy Fleetwood, though he finished six shots back in the end. So, Tommy, any regrets from your week at Portrush?
Well, I think 100% it was Shane's time, and I think he definitely played the best golf throughout the week. Like, I can easily look back and think, if I'd have holed a couple of putts on the back nine on Saturday when he did and the crowd was going in Sunday, for sure, like, I can always, you know, I'll always look and say, if I hold that putt on one or if I hold that putt on three, just short putts that could have changed momentum so much and maybe given me a bit more of a chance. But, I mean, they're a massive if. And the truth is, and the real facts are, Shane played the best golf for that week, and it was one of the best stories in sport all year. You know, that Saturday, like I say, I put that down as one of my highlights for myself personally. And I think being a part of that Sunday as well was unreal. The atmosphere and everything and you know, being up front and centre to witness that and to be one of the players there was amazing. And you know what, Shane's a very, very close friend and I couldn't have been happier for him either. So that was, it was a special week, that one.
We expect you to perform well in majors. Do you therefore look back on the other three this year and think, do you know what, I've not played as well as I have done in the past or to my potential? What were your assessments of the other three in 2019?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you look back at them with some disappointment. I think at times I maybe got a couple of things in preparation wrong, but other times it was closer than I think things were closer. The only really disappointing one was I felt like I played very poorly at the US Open. I think the Masters, you know, going into the back nine on Sunday, if I'd have shot maybe a couple under on that back nine, I'd have been top 10, which is, you know, they're always amazing results in majors. And the USPGA for 36 holes, I was the second best golfer in the tournament, or 32 holes, sorry, I was the second best golfer in the tournament, and then just, you know, went on a bit of a landslide. But there was, throughout the majors, there were some positives to take. They weren't the results that we were looking for, and you only get four chances of those a year. And you look back, you think the Open was definitely my best chance and where I play my best golf. And I was happy that I showed more. It was more evidence of, you know, getting up there in a major and showing that I can be there until the end. And it didn't happen, but hopefully my time will come.
You mentioned the word preparation. The way that the schedule falls now with the four majors in consecutive months, did that help or hinder you?
You know, it was just different, I think. And the one thing that it did show up was that they come so thick and fast now, the majors, that you have to be ready. You know, you have to be ready for the Masters, and then you have to keep yourself ready all through the summer. And you saw, I wouldn't say just me, but you saw Tiger won the Masters. And then I think so many players are used to being able to then just shut down for a bit or, like, you know, regroup and regather and then prepare for the next one. And you kind of don't have that chance anymore. It just makes scheduling a little bit harder. It means you have to be really on the ball, and you just got to hope, not hope, but you kind of got to make things work out. I don't mind it. It was a strange feeling walking off the 18th at the Open and knowing that you don't have a major for, I think it's like 8 months or 9 months, whatever it is. That was a strange feeling. But, you know, I think we'll give it, you know, you need another year for sure. I think it, you know, it shocks everybody into it at first because it's so different. But then I think it is our job as golfers to be ready and make yourself ready and prepare as best you can. It makes for a great summer. It's just a long time in between the Open and the Masters then. But, you know, I've been looking at the schedule already and I'm already looking forward to kind of getting back out there and getting in those events again.
You mentioned the Masters, first of the year, obviously. Tiger Woods claiming success. How big a story in terms of golf and sport do you think that was this year?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? It was, again, it was one of them, like we're talking about, you know, the Open and Shane's moment there. I think that just sounded through all of sport. Tiger, you know, he has been arguably the greatest sportsman of all time and definitely one of, if not the greatest sportsman of the last decade or two. And I think we're very lucky to have him in our sport. Whatever critics he's had, whatever people have thought, it's always been up for debate. Would he ever come back and what would he do? And goes and wins the Masters again. And it's just cool. Anytime he's up there, it's a ridiculous atmosphere. Anytime Tiger Woods is up there and challenging for an event, and when it's the Masters, it's just on another level. So I think it was very special for people to watch. If no matter what you do, no matter what line of work you're in, no matter what sport you're in, I think that was just very, very special. And I say it's come back, and we're lucky to have stories like that are in our sport.
Well, Tommy talking with Dan Roebuck there, and Tommy looks ahead to some of the big golfing moments in 2020, just a little bit later on in this show. Now, he talked about a moment that resounded through all of sport. We all chose it, Tiger Woods winning the Masters. Bob, I know you're a big Tiger fan. Augusta National was very special at the Tiger. How special was it for you?
Well, it was incredible, and it actually began, believe it or not, Tiger wins the Tour Championship, and the Monday after the Tour Championship being held on Sunday, we get a phone call from the people that we have rented the same house for, I think, about 15 years in Augusta. And it's Monday morning, and we're asked, are you going to take the house again? It was quite surprising even to get the phone call. And I said, yeah, I'm sure we are. He said, well, just to let you know, prices of houses have doubled and tripled since Tiger's win down in Atlanta. So that type of excitement for Tiger, that was coming into the event. And then obviously what transpired over the next 4 days was simply incredible.
And for you, Jamie, I mean, let's take ourselves back to the President's Cup in 2017 at Liberty National. Tiger was a vice captain. He could only hit chip shots 50 yards. That's all he could do. Who would have thought?
Well, I didn't think he could
do
it.
When you get to 2019, he adds to his major tally. No one would have backed him for that.
His back operations. Bob said there, you know, he won the Tour Championship, so you can't muck around to win that. He's played some fantastic. But yeah, you're right. Go back 2-3 years. I've never thought he could do this, ever. Who did, really? You know he can do extraordinary things. Tiger. And I've got to say, I mean, he got away with a few drives as well. And he also, Molinari let him in as well. So a few things went in his favour, but it doesn't matter. He stuck at it. He hit some great shots. I couldn't believe that he came back and won that. I saw him at the Ryder Cup after he won that, the FedEx Finals there. And he could hardly walk in the Ryder Cup. He looked a man 15 years older than his actual age there. So when you see that, you think, wow, you know, he's been through a lot. Had those back operations, knee operations, all the rest of it, everything he's been through. It just went way beyond our sport, that.
But with all the holes around Augusta National, Bob, that, you know, you look at and you think potentially this is a very testing par four, it's a par five I can't quite reach, it's always that little dogged 12th hole that seems to be either it makes you or it breaks you. And for some of the others that didn't win that week, it broke them, including Francesco Molinari.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And let me just throw it back at you guys, because you both played, you both competed. How is it possible that a little 150-yard hole, just because it has water in front of it, becomes so difficult? Just ask Jordan Spieth. You know, he lost the Masters on the 12th hole. Molinari certainly lost the Masters on the 12th hole. What is it, guys, about that hole that just makes it such an incredible test, even though on paper it looks pretty simple?
Well, because on the Sunday they stick the flag on the right-hand side and they become greedy. One of the few players who didn't go for that pin was Tiger. He'd have nothing to do with it. He went straight over the middle of that bunker. Jack Nicklaus didn't. They just read what Jack says. Jack says, go straight over the middle of that bunker.
Every time.
Every time. Mm. Forget the flag. But the others just, they're just like a magnet being drawn into that pin on that right-hand side. And there is no margin for error.
And also, Bob, it's a very clever hole because the green runs away from front left to back right, diagonally across you. So whatever point you choose on the green to hit, you've got to hit it on that target line with the right club. Otherwise, if you aim in the middle of the green to hit it over the bunker and you pull it, you're now long. You're flying long over the green. And if you push it, you're in the water. So wherever you aim on that green, you've got to hit the right shot and the right club. And add to that, the wind switches around in that little corner. It comes funneling down the 11th. And then you get to 12 with the big headland of trees behind the green. And it is guesswork on that tee. It's a frightening hole.
And Bob, you've been there. I've never been to Augusta. You've obviously been there so many times. I can imagine when the gates open, the quick walk, they all walk towards that 12th tee. It's packed there, isn't it? Mm. Absolutely packed. That's the hole where everybody goes to.
You get to see 11. You get to see 12.
That's where everyone wants to go and see.
Amen corner.
The patrons know. The patrons know, Bob.
Yeah. Of course, Bob, you'll know you're not allowed to run at Augusta. You would know that.
No running allowed, which doesn't come into play for me anymore, so I'm happy about that. But here's the thing, maybe our listeners will be surprised to hear. They do line up at the gates early to get their vantage point. The gates open, they walk as fast as they can to their favorite spot. And you're right, Jamie, a lot of them want to be around 12. They also want to be around 16, the par 3. But unlike any other event that I know of, you get to your favorite spot, you put your chair down, you then can go anywhere on the golf course, come back 4 or 5 hours later, and that chair will be in the exact same spot you left it. That's just magical to me. Nobody will take your spot. It's just part of the Masters mystique.
And another bit of Masters mystique, how much can one shot affect a career? Because Francesco Molinari was on top of the world until he hit that tee shot at the 12th. Looked like he was going to win. A guy that doesn't make mistakes, like Mr. Robot, with precision and repetitive, the way he plays. He's just going to keep grinding down a golf course.
It has definitely affected him.
Yeah.
Molinari's not been the same player tee to green. You'd have to ask, we'd have to get into the mind of the great Italian, really. But yeah, it's definitely affected him, as it affected Spieth.
Sure.
As it's bound to affect that magnifying glass that's put on you at the Masters. It's everyone in the world is watching it. It's bound to affect you, Robert. And let's hope he can get himself out of it.
Tommy talked, Bob, about the change in the schedule with the PGA coming forward to be the second major of the year. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, last year was the first year of the condensed version of the majors. And ironically enough, it seemed to me to be okay. April Masters, May PGA, June U.S. Open, July Open Championship. But the void that occurs following the Open Championship, it is a long wait till we tee it up again at the Masters. And that's the part of it I don't like. I don't object to four in a row. I think it really gets everybody up to a fever pitch. But it's then after that final putt at the Open Championship that boy, next April is the next major. I mean, it just seems light years apart.
How about you, Jamie?
Yeah, I agree. I don't like that condensed period for the four majors. I think we give the four majors probably a little bit too more prominence than they deserve personally. But to have them all back-to-back like that, I agree with Bob, we should have one later in the year. Wait, I know why they've done it, through the PGA Tour and TV contracts and keeping a big event in the States every month. And with the FedEx Finals coming after the Open, then you've got the NFL. So I understand why the TV companies want it this way. But
we're in December. We're right now in the middle of the lull, aren't we?
It's the middle of the summer in Australia and South Africa, where they produce a lot of great champions through time. So I think the USPGA missed a bit of a trick. They could have taken this tournament. This could have been the one they could have taken elsewhere at a different time of the year, and they could have really created something special, which maybe the Olympics will give us, but it won't be quite the same. And I think it puts a lot of pressure on the players as well. It just gives so much prominence to these four tournaments that the rest can sort of fall by the wayside.
Well, as we're talking about the PGA, Bob, I know you were very taken with the Brooks Koepka win at Bethpage.
Well, simply incredible. I mean, having won the PGA the year before, the fact that Koepka goes to, it's regarded as one of the toughest golf course in America, Bethpage Black. It's got a reputation of its own. And Brooks Koepka seemed to be on cruise control. He came to that back nine and all of a sudden couldn't make a putt, hitting bad shot after bad shot. And you started to say, well, maybe the pressure of going back to back. And part of what I thought was happening was Brooks Koepka had made it clearly known to all of his players, to all of the media, that the majors are the only thing that's important to him. And a lot of players, I can tell you this, were not happy with that proclamation for whatever reason. But Brooks, that's the way he feels. And I guess when you win four out of eight, you can feel that way because you're very confident you're going to win one. I mean, don't forget how many guys that go through without ever winning a major. When I say four out of eight, then I automatically think of Colin Montgomery, none. You know, Luke Donald, none. Ian Poulter, none. I mean, so many great players that have never tasted a victory in a major. They're witnessing a guy that's knocking them off on a regular basis. But he had enough in the tank, and he prevailed coming down the last couple of holes. Dustin Johnson was trying to put pressure on him, unable to do so. And it was Brooks Koepka at the end. And we need a crystal ball to see exactly how good he's going to be. But, boy, over the last couple of years, there's nobody any better playing in the majors.
Yeah, Brooks Koepka was absolutely fantastic. Have you heard anything stateside about his injury, the knee?
I have. I have a friend that lives not too far from where Brooks resides, and he's been at the gym and he's working out. It appears at this juncture everything is going to be fine. He's giving it plenty of rest, withdrew from the President's Cup, which I think was very smart. But I think Brooks is going to be fine. He doesn't play, he doesn't overly play. He doesn't have to. I mean, financially already he's more than set. But now his focus is just going to be on being ready. He wants a green jacket, and I think he'll be a force to be reckoned with when we get to Augusta.
Well, tips-wise, in 2019, this is how it all panned out. Let's take ourselves back to our tips for the Masters in this studio 12 months ago, Jamie. Ewan went for Tiger Woods to win Augusta.
Big call, that.
Which was a big call at the time.
Yeah, big call.
Very big call. I went for Rory. That didn't work out. Bob, you went for Jon Rahm, the world number three right now, and that didn't work out. At the USPGA Championship, I went for Rahm. You went for Molinari, and Bob went for Brooks Koepka. Bing!
Well done, Bob.
Finally.
It's hard to do. You might get one of those winning one major, but it might not be the one that you pick. US Open, Pebble Beach, of course. Tiger Woods I went for to repeat the 15-shot victory that he had back in 2000. That didn't work out. You and Justin Rose, Bob, Dustin Johnson, no good. And then at the Open, where Shane Lowry won, we didn't pick him either. Ricky Fowler for me. Ewan went for Jon Rahm, and Bob, you went for Rory, who, of course, exploded out of the tournament in two rounds. Are we going to have a little guess at the 2020 majors? I think we should.
I believe so. That's why I've done some research, Robert. So I hope I hope we're going to do it.
I like it. So let's start, as you're right opposite me, with your pick for Augusta National. There's only one in my view, one winner, but you carry on.
There's only one winner for you?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So is there any point in us discussing this, or should we go your call?
No, because I'm going to give it to you last.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It does seem it's the course where the same names crop up, obviously, with Tiger, 5-time winner, Phil, a 3-time winner.
Yeah.
My pick, I'm just going to make it pretty simple, will be Dustin Johnson on a golf course that I think he lost by a shot last year. I think it's a course made for him with his length. Knows it very well now.
So did Brooks and so did Xander Schauffele, I think.
I agree with that. But Dustin Johnson, you could pick a number of players here.
You're right.
But I think DJ would be banging there going to the last day, so he's my pick.
Bob?
Well, there's a strong Spanish connection to the Masters, from Seve to Jose and Sergio. I think John Rahm is going to get the job done come April.
So that's a repeat of your 2019 tip, John Rahm.
Right.
You did get the memo. You did get the memo. It's a new year. But you're going for John Rahm again?
Yes. You just don't kick a man when he's down, especially when he's that big. He's a married guy now. I think he's got everything going for him. I think he'll win handily.
So you think it's Rahmageddon for the field?
I do.
I'm going to say Tiger Woods is going to win again.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
I'm saying
Haven't
Tiger Woods.
Haven't you run out of fairy tales yet?
Listen, I think he seemed fit and healthy. He won the Zozo just around the corner. He nearly won his own tournament. He just won 3 out of 3 at the President's Cup. And I think if his body stays in shape, there's only one winner. I'm going Tiger Woods.
He
gets to 16. He's creeping close then, isn't he?
He is, yes. He is.
He's creeping close to the magical 18. And
Rory's
and then,
Rory going for the Grand Slam?
Oh, I'd love Rory to win it. My heart says Rory, my head says Tiger.
Okay.
Okay. USPGA, Harding Park, California. That's in San Francisco, by the way. Jamie.
Me first.
Yes, sir.
Of course, I'm not familiar with, although looking at the record, I see your man Tiger won the Amex there back in 2005. And in the President's Cup, he had a 5-0 record. So I think he quite likes it. Rory won the World Match Play there in 2015. Tommy Fleetwood was saying he really enjoys it around there as well. So I've written down 3 names here for this tournament. And the PGA seems to be more of a PGA Tour course for me, just a bit tougher, throw the rough up a bit. I've written Woods, McIlroy and Koepka as my 3. And with Koepka's knee, Woods driving, I'm going to go for Rory, McIlroy.
Yeah, it's a good choice.
McIlroy for PGA.
At Harding Park. USPGA, Rory McIlroy, Jamie Spence. And for Bob Bubka?
Well, there's somebody that fits nicely, at least by his outward appearance, into the culture of San Francisco, and that's Tommy Fleetwood. And I think he breaks through and gets his first major.
I'm going to go with a player that's eventually going to get to world number one. That's John Rahm. I'm going to absolutely pick John Rahm to win a major this year. And I think, listen, when you've got a game as complete as his, you could call all 4 majors out and say he's very good on links courses. He can certainly play right around Augusta, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think John Rahm is going to break his major duck in the second major championship of the year at Harding Park in San Francisco. Again, you can't go wrong with these calls, but only one of them is going to be right. Now, I want Bob, you to give us a little rush around, a little fly around wing foot and tell us what sort of a course it is.
Absolutely incredible. One of the benchmark golf courses in America. It plays extremely tough. Just ask Phil Mickelson. All he needed was an adequate drive on the 72nd hole, and he would have completed his career Grand Slam. Wingfoot is as good gets. It's a great test. It's going to play tough for the U.S. Open, and it's a special place. That's the only way I can leave it, and I am going to pick Justin Thomas to get the job done. You have to be gritty, you have to be courageous, and you have to have a wealth of talent. Justin Thomas fills all those boxes very nicely. So I think it's Thomas who wins his second major championship.
Jay Spence.
Well, it's used sparingly, Wingfoot. It's only 5 times US Open. And as Bob said, it's going to be a tough one. Hale Irwin won in 1974. He's 7 over par by 2. Now, Bob, I'll be really impressed if you can tell me who was runner-up to Hale Irwin in 1974, either of you, I'll be really,
That's
really
when
impressed.
That's did the big runaround.
I'll be written, maybe, yes, that might have been it. Yeah. 1974, he won by two shots. Bob, any idea? I've never heard of this fella.
I know the answer to this.
Do you?
Yeah. And it's...
Well, I'll let you... And Fuzzy Zeller beat Norman in a playoff. And then, of course, 2006, as Bob says, Jeff Ogilvy. He was five over as well, by the way. So we're looking for grinder.
I think we're D. Looking for D a is grinder. Prominent in the name.
No.
That's not what I'm thinking.
No, it's not.
Is it a B then?
No.
No, I've got the
There's
wrong
a Z in the name. And it's not Fuzzy Zeller. Come on,
can
Bob.
I make a guess?
Yes, go on.
Forrest Fesler.
Yes, Bob. How did you get that? Forrest Fesler. Never heard of him.
Forrest Fesler. Is that one or two Zs?
I don't know.
Okay.
Can you remember anything about him, Bob?
I don't. I really don't.
Bob was there at his birth.
Oh, that's brilliant. But they 7-over win, and Ogilvy was 5-over. So we're talking a tough course. I'm going to pick a tough cookie who's. Looks a major winner on this sort of golf course, and that's Xander Schauffele.
Yeah, Xander's a really good player, and he played well. He had a run when Francesco won at Carnoustie. He had a run there.
Close.
When Tiger was there, he had a run.
Yep.
He had a real opportunity. He finished second at the Masters last year. He's a really good young
player.
That's
why I picked him, Rob.
I understand that.
Who are you going for?
I am going to go for, it's going to be tough. The rough will be horrible. So I'm going to go for someone who's got biceps bulging and doesn't mind gouging.
Ooh.
And he didn't play in the President's Cup.
Let me guess.
Brooks Koepka.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to go for Brooks Koepka to win the US Open. He does tend to like the US Open.
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
Just a follow-up on that 1974 US Open.
Mm-hmm.
Hale Irwin, the winner, collected a whopping check for $35,000. Forrest Fesler, $18,000 for second place.
Forrest Fesler.
Is that what he got?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's unbelievable. Then we get to what is now, and we're still getting used to it, the last major championship
of
the year.
I won't get used to that, Robert. Sorry, but there you go. We'll have to get used to it.
Yeah. It's like you've got to get used to eight irons carrying 190 yards. You get used to it.
Yeah, I guess.
You get used to it. It is the final major of the year, the 149th Open at one of my favourite tracks, Royal St George's. Now, Royal St George's tends to be Marmite. You either love it or you don't like it. No one's kind of in the middle on the fence. Which side are you?
Well, it is from my home county, the Garden of England in Kent.
Kent, that's right.
I don't love it,
oh, okay.
But I'm not Marmite. I think it's a tough course
it's
to
tough,
play.
Unforgiving.
I enjoy playing the golf course.
Okay.
I just think aesthetically it doesn't appeal because there's no panoramic view or anything like that because it is stuck in the middle of nowhere. But as a golf course to play, it's a terrific golf course to
I
play.
Love it. I love it.
It really is. And
that was my first Open there.
Was that your first? I played 93 there.
I played 85 there.
Did
that was
you
my
really?
First one,
Crikey,
yeah.
You are young. You are old now, aren't you? How old are you now? You must be really old.
58, mate. What are you, sweet cheeks?
Younger than that, Robert.
You're not by much.
But it's thrown some interesting winners. It's been quite kind to the British and Irish players with Darren winning there 2011. Sandy Lyle won there. And back in the day, Henry Cotton won there in 1934.
Bill Rogers, Greg Norman.
Bill Rogers, Ben Curtis. So it's some odd winners.
Did Greg
you
Norman
say?
Win at St. George's?
Yes,
I think
he did.
Yeah,
he did. 1993, the year I played.
Yeah.
Although I didn't challenge him. I made the cut, but I can't say he was worried about me.
That was good.
He was 13 under. It's the lowest he's ever been around there. Tough track. Do you want me to make a pick?
Yes.
Would you like me to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to go for your man. I'm going to go for the link specialist, which is John Rahm. I've written down Rory and Sergio. I think Sergio might have a little run at this because you've got to play well tee to green here.
Yeah.
You really have. But Rahm for me.
We have been a different player, all of us, all the way through.
We have, yeah.
To this point, which is unusual. Go on, Bob.
Well, it's going to be different again because the sand is running through that hourglass pretty rapidly for this player. But he has
I thought
a
you were going to say for you.
that jar is empty, baby. This player has a pedigree. He's won a United States amateur, yet to win his first major, but I think Matt Kuchar is going to get the job done at Royal St. George's. And listen, if Ben Curtis can do it, Matt Kuchar can do it.
Well, that's a big call, Matt Kuchar.
Well, he's
call.
The sort of player that I think St. George's, okay. You know, he's a gritty player, isn't he?
Yeah.
Isn't he, Kuchar? So, yeah, that's a good call.
I'm with you, John Rahm.
You're with, you, 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 is Rahm taking over from Thomas Peters winning everything now for you?
we can talk about this in 12 months' time.
We can, yes.
I'm either going to look very good
or
very bad.
So you're going to tip Rahm or every tournament?
I've had two Rahms.
Okay.
Yeah, and you'll notice two Rahms do not make a right. You'll notice that Tiger that Ewan picked and Brooks that Bob picked were the only correct ones out of the whole slew of majors from last year. So to get one is very, very difficult indeed.
Well, listen, if you kept tipping Rahm, eventually he's going to win one, isn't he? And it's getting closer.
It's like tipping Rory.
He's still a young man.
When's Rory going to win? Has anyone tipped?
Well, yeah, I have.
You've tipped him.
I tipped Rory for the PGA.
USPGA, yeah. Mm. It's got to come for him soon, isn't it? Especially with the season he's just had.
McIlroy? Yeah, I definitely.
Yeah.
But there, as I keep saying in the last few years, I've never known the world of professional golf so strong. There's so many good players. We haven't mentioned Justin Rose, Paul Casey, and others. Patrick Cantlay.
You've got to say that Rose and Casey.
Is Ricky Fowler going to win one?
They're nearer the exit.
Is Ricky Fowler going to win one? Francesco is going to get his game back? There's so many good players, so it's difficult. We're aging to the
top
end.
Very hard to win a golf tournament anywhere in the world, and it's super hard to win a major.
Yeah.
It really is. So anyone that gets it done, hats off.
It seems though St George's springs a surprise.
It can do. You wouldn't say Greg Norman's.
Well, he's the only one. The rest of them, Darren Clark was a surprise.
It certainly was.
Ben Curtis, Bill Rogers, Sandy Lyle was a surprise.
Sandy.
He was, but he was then.
I'm not sure. He was an amazing player. Amazing player.
We have a first British winner since Tony Jacklin, so
yeah,
he was a surprise at the time. But anyway, it's not for everyone, St George's, as you said. Oh, my memory of St George's is Tiger Woods sitting into the rough on the first and losing his ball. That was my memory.
And Dustin Johnson coming down the stretch with Darren Clark and blowing an iron out of bounds
on
14.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a seminal moment for him.
Have you been to St George's, Bob?
I have. I was standing about 10 feet from where Tiger hit that drive on number one. It was pouring rain. I went out there early to get a good vantage point. I regretted that decision for the next 5 hours, but I was right there. There's one number that I'd like to bring up, because the more I think about it, the harder it is for me to wrap my head around it. And that is Gary Player having played in 46 Open Championships. 46. I mean, that's mind-boggling.
Yeah, he's been an incredible player, Gary Player. 46 is, yeah, how many, you have to say probably the last 10, he wouldn't have been competitive, but...
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it?
It's amazing. Some man.
Yeah, it's amazing. Let's talk a bit about team golf.
Team golf,
yeah,
yes.
I know you've got a little Solheim Cup that you want to mention, which was amazing.
I just think maybe we should talk about it. It was
brilliant.
Incredible. I was on course. I followed Siganda's match, and then I went back and followed Anne van Damme when she got beat by Salas at the last. And at that point, I thought, well, that's all over. It's done. I went and had a cup of tea, sat on a buggy. All of a sudden, my producer's shouting in my ear, they got a putt. Europe had got a putt to win. And in my head, Europe were done. They were gone.
Right.
And then suddenly, Bronte Law came back.
She waltzed one in across the green.
She won one. And then suddenly, Suzanne Pedersen, of all people, has got that putt on the last to win. I mean, I was standing on the green. Suzanne Pedersen, who's come back from having their first child and...
Controversial pick.
Not played golf for about a year and a half. And she's the girl who's got the putt. And boom, right in the middle.
And that was the last competitive shot she ever hit.
Incredible. Incredible story. What was it like over there, Bob, watching that?
Well, I just echo your sentiments. Everybody over here certainly had the United States coming out on top. It was done and dusted. There was going to be no excitement. But just backing up what Robert Lee said, when you think that your last competitive shot is a winning putt for a Solheim Cup, I mean, good golly, you can't write stuff like that. And the excitement level that followed. Jamie, I'm jealous I wasn't there alongside of you in that buggy because...
Bob. We wouldn't be drinking tea.
No, well, we would not be doing that. That's for sure. But it had to be one of the more exciting moments in all of golf.
It was amazing. It was
probably
amazing.
Probably the last 10 years.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was... reminiscent of Medina, I've got to be honest. It was one of those golf just does that to me. I think that's why we all love the game, that you just don't know what's going to happen with golf, do you, in these circumstances. You think, well, it's gone. There's no way they can win, whoever it is, individually or team-wise. And these miracles seem to occur.
I know, but you know, another thing, September, Glen Eagles, the weather could have been double foul there.
It's beautiful.
And the pictures, the colour and the crowds and the kit that the players were wearing and the sunshine there was reminiscent of the extra day they played at Celtic Manor when they had to go to the Monday. And all of a sudden the clouds lifted and the sunshine came out and the pictures just looked amazing.
It was great for ladies' golf.
Yeah, it was.
As well. And it was, I think the American team were the stronger side, but the Europeans just seem to be inspired. Yeah. Bronte Law, some performance. She's the Ian Poulter of
tough little cookie, isn't she?
She's tough. She was brilliant.
Really good competitor. Yeah, it was excellent. I thoroughly enjoyed watching it. And Bob, it was the right result, if you know what I mean. We should look ahead with that victory for the European ladies to the next Ryder Cup, Bob, where the United States desperately need a win, but you've got home advantage.
Yeah, but I don't know how much of a home advantage it's going to be. It's a great golf course in a great state. Whistling Straits has played host to major championships in the past. So it's a very difficult golf course to follow players. If any of our listeners are planning their trip to Cola, Wisconsin, there's a lot of slopes and a lot of difficult spots on that golf course. It's the pride and joy of Herb Kohler, who has done so much for the sport of golf. And the ironic story about Herb Kohler, who is a very, very well-to-do plumbing company owner in the state of Wisconsin, but he wanted to get into the golf business, and this is a true story. He called the USGA, got the switchboard operator, and she said, "How can I help you?" And he said, "Well, I want to talk to somebody. I want to host a U.S. Open." And there was silence on the other end of the line for quite a while. And then finally the operator said, "Hold on, I'll connect you with somebody." A member of the USGA answers the phone. Herb repeats his request. "I want to host a U.S. Open." And he was informed, "Well, we'd have to look at your facility and we'd have to do this, that, and the other thing." Herb's response was, "You tell me when you want to come and look, I'll send a plane." And from that unbelievable initial phone call, the world of professional golf at the highest level is now a landmark in Cola, Wisconsin. And Herb still around. Not doing that well, but hopefully he said he wants to be there for the PGA Ryder Cup, and I hope to join him there.
You know what's funny about the Whistling Straits as a venue, when it's hosted the PGA Championship three times, you've got Vijay Singh, Jason Day, and Martin Keimer that won around there. No American winners.
Very interesting, Robert. Mm-hmm. Although Dustin Johnson should have won it, had he known he was in a bunker rather than a waste. He thought he was in a waste area.
That's right.
All the punters were walking around, because there's bunkers everywhere there.
Over 1,000 bunkers.
Yeah, all over the place. So he didn't realise he was in a waste area, he was in a bunker, and he got penalised for it. And the last, I've been to, they're going to need good weather, Lake Michigan.
Lake Michigan, the weather can be really
horrible.
Ropey there.
Yeah, it's going to need good weather. And there's, I think
you'll
it's only,
know all about that being a Green Bay Packers fan.
I know, a big Packers fan here, Bob. State of Wisconsin is 3/4 the size of the whole of the UK. And there's only 5.6 million people live there. It's a big state.
It's a lot of space.
It's a big state with a lot of space. And this course is built on a lot of space. It's a tough, tough track. I think I agree with Bob. I don't think it gives the American team a huge home advantage, to be honest with you. And he's right about spectators as well. They can only walk down two sides, I think, of only about 8 or 9 of the holes. So you're going to be down one side because of the lake.
A bit like St Andrews in many ways.
Yeah, so it'll be different, but it's a spectacular course to watch on TV. It'll be a fantastic competition, but we need your fingers crossed with the weather.
It'll be wild and woolly there. It could be.
It will be.
Yeah, it could be, and quite a lot of waterproofs.
Have you picked your Ryder Cup team, Robert?
No.
Oh.
I haven't. That's not for the show, I don't believe.
No, I know. No,
I'm just checking.
I'm just, you know, it's quite interesting. Though.
We'll be doing it January the 1st again.
Okay,
you and I did it last year.
All right, we'll be doing
that. We'll
be
doing it again,
okay.
Yeah, that's right. What are you looking forward to then, Bob, in 2020, before we let you go?
Actually, I'm looking forward to a lot of things. I think 2020 has the potential to be one of the all-time great years in golf. And I was just thinking back on our picks. We have some guys that just came onto the tour Matthew Wolf and Victor Hovland.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he could win a major in a heartbeat. These new kids, all they do is hit it far, they hit it straight, and they do it without fear. I mean, it is incredible to watch. I think professional golf really is in the middle of the golden age right now, and especially when you got Tiger representing what used to be and young guys representing what can be. We're in a good place, and I truly believe 2020 may end up being one of the more exciting years in the history of professional golf.
And you got another kid you didn't mention, Colin Morikawa, who got his card without having to go to the school. Hovland and Wolf were the headline makers, but he looks like a really, really good player. Kind of Xander Schauffele type player. So, yeah, there's a lot to look forward to. And for you, Jamie?
Same as Bob. I with the Ryder Cup, yeah. And I think the Olympics, they're all going to turn up for the Olympics this time. They've seen what it's done for Justin Rose being announced Olympic champion for 4 years.
Four years worth of that. Very nice.
Accolade, and there's a lot that goes with it. So they'll all be turning up there as well. We've got some wonderful golf courses to look forward to, some great tournaments with some great players, Rob. It's going to be, I think 2019's been fantastic.
It has been a great year.
It's been great to get close up to watch the emergence of Jon Rahm as a world force, watching him out there in Dubai, watching Rory seems to have grabbed hold of himself and his game. He looks like he's ready to pounce again. Tiger's come back into the fold, and all the other great players. It's going to be sensational year.
Bob, great to talk to you. Listen, happy new year to you and to Janice. So you do a great, great job, not only for the world of golf, but for us here on the Race to Dubai show. And I know sometimes we get you up at an ungodly hour, but great to talk to you again, and we'll see you soon, pal.
Hey, it's an honor to be on with both you guys. Pleasure's all mine, and let's just get ready for a dynamic 2020. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Bob. It's always great to hear from Bob, and even in his dotage, his golfing dotage, he's so enthusiastic. He absolutely loves the game. He really does. Okay, let's play you the last part of our end-of-year Tommy Fleetwood interview. And before Tommy chats about the Ryder Cup and his Tokyo 2020 ambitions, Dan Roebuck asked him about hosting May's Betfred British Masters at the Hillside Golf Club in Southport.
I loved it. I did actually love it. I loved bringing an event to where I'm from and seen so many people out there that I knew. I was actually really poorly that week. I had like a really bad virus, and I literally got in the car at the end of every day and just went to sleep on the way home. I let Claire drive. I let my wife drive, but like absolutely loved it. And I think, you know, it was never about me. It was about bringing a tournament to the Northwest that people have said for so long is starved of tournament golf, and on what I think such an amazing golf course. And I think it was for the people, really. It was for the crowds and for the people of that area where I'm from. I think that was definitely what I wanted to do for them. The nicest thing was all the players that would come up to me and say, what a great golf course, or what a great week it's been. You know, the crowd were amazing. You know, the players' lounge was amazing. And I think just all the efforts that people went to that week. And it was actually a different insight into what goes into an event that, you know, we turn up and play every week, but you don't see how much goes into putting these events on. And I remember waking up and going to the course on the Tuesday, I think it was, and I was like, I feel a bit nervous today, and like I don't get nervous about practice rounds, but it was just that the event was starting and I just wanted it to go so well, and it really couldn't have gone any better. And you know, I loved every minute of it, and I'm very grateful to everybody that was involved in that.
Well, you were the perfect host, and you've pushed yourself a little bit in terms of things outside of the game. How did the content committee videos go for you? Because they were very well received. Did you enjoy doing them? Are you going to do some more?
Yeah, but Henrik's got to stop making me laugh. I can't sit around and look at. I've got to speak to Henrik in like my first line of it, and then it takes about 10 minutes to get to the next of him. So we might need to look into that. It was in Abu Dhabi, I think, the first one, and you know, we all jumped on it, and we just had a good time with it. It was, you know, four funny lads and me, and then they do such a good job, the content guys, and they're a pleasure to work with. So fair play to them, and it's always nice doing their stuff and then kind of making you look good when you do something. So I enjoy that.
I think everybody enjoys them, and everyone involved in golf, certainly from my point of view anyway, we want to see things that come outside of what is viewed as traditional golf and how the game is played and how it's viewed. And if we can do anything that jumps outside of the sort of normal narrative, then it's got to be good for the game, don't you think?
For sure, yeah. And I think it's important that the image of golf gets passed around to all different kinds of people, and for people to know that the guys are I want to say the words human. Obviously, we're human, but it's important for people to see the players' personalities and just feel like you know us a little bit more. And it is very difficult, you know, when we play a tournament, the tournaments are so important week in, week out, and your focus literally goes into those events all week, like throughout, and there's a purpose to everything you do. From, you know, if you're at the course at 9 in the morning and you know you're there till 5, there's always a purpose to what you're doing. And I think, you know, of course, we'd love to give people more time. And, you know, I think the majority, we all do our best with that. And I'm sure that we sort of miss people or we might let people down, which is not what we want to hear. But we do try our best and you're always doing a job. And I just think it's so good that people can get to see a side of somebody's personality. And then when you do come to a tournament, you can say something funny or you know that you could interact with these guys and they'll give something back. And I massively believe in growing the game. And if those videos can reach, you know, just a few people that have never played golf before, but look at these guys and think, oh yeah, they're doing well, and then maybe start following it and then may take it up. You know, that's bringing the game that I love and a game that's given me a lot into society, which I believe can help people and do good. So, you know, it can go a long way, all of that.
Looking ahead to 2020, major venues, how do you fancy these? Harding Park for the USPGA, US Open is at Winged Foot, and the Open at Royal St George's. Which one are you looking forward to the most? the usual venue, strangely enough, Tommy.
Usual venue.
Which one are you looking forward to?
You know, for me and for, you know, everybody that's probably British, I think the one that we always look forward to is the Open, and you can't deny that. And I will always say it, that if I can win one event and never play again, it would be the Open. So that one always stands out. Of course, the Masters is amazing. You know, you never stop being grateful for playing Augusta. I played Harding Park. The World Match Play was there a few years ago in like 2015. And I enjoyed that course. I enjoyed San Francisco. And then there's Winged Foot that I've never been to. But I do get excited. I love the challenge of US Open courses, especially the older ones like Shinnecock, like the more traditional ones. So I think it'll be a great year at major venues. I won't hide it. The Open is always the one that I look forward to the most. But I'm not going to be picky about whichever I do well in.
Ryder Cup is at Whistling Straits. It'll be your first in the States. How much?
Well, I hope so.
Well,
hope so.
Let's put it this way. I would suggest that you will be making the team by hook or by crook. How much are you going to be looking forward to that, do you think?
A lot. Nothing to this day is like a Ryder Cup. Got some of my fondest memories. Nothing beats winning as a team. Nothing beats being there as a team. And I'm sure losing as a team, you know, it's not going to be great, but, you know, you almost rather do that than be with yourself. And just, you know, I got so lucky with so many things being my first Ryder Cup. I had Thomas as a great captain. I had Le Golf National that we know well. I had Fran alongside me for 2 days, which couldn't have gone any better. And I had a great bunch of teammates. So
when does the build-up start then? Are you literally starting to think about it already?
You chat about it now and again, but you always have in the back of your mind, you know, the one thing this year is you've got like Olympics in the back of your mind, you've got Ryder Cup in the back of your mind, you know, Race to Dubai, FedEx, whatever's going on, there's always things in the back of your mind. And the only way to deal with all that is going shot by shot, week by week, you know, just all the cliche stuff. But, you know, we'll talk about it now and again, you know, all the time. You know, the guys that have been in it, it's so many fond memories from it. So, and you have a bond with those players once you've played one. I think that's something that I've carried with me, is you have that bond with the players that you've been with because you've experienced. And Rory's already, you know, we spoke about it and he said America's, you know, America's very different playing a Ryder Cup there. So it's something that I'd love to do, and I'll just keep working hard, and hopefully if I am there, I can do my bit for the team.
You mentioned Olympics, which is slightly different in terms of qualification, obviously. And I'm always interested to talk to golfers about Olympics because it wasn't an Olympic sport for a long time. It was 100 or so years ago, and then it came back, of course. But for you guys, it seems like a big deal. Is it for you personally?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to be a part of the Olympics. I'd love to see the opening ceremony. I'd love to be around all the, you know, the greatest athletes on the planet. And I think having a medal or a gold, yeah, especially a gold medal, is something unbelievably special. I'm going to be working towards that. I want to go 100%. I want to be there, and I'd love to challenge, you know, for a medal or for the gold medal. I know the first time, it was almost 4 years ago, first time golf would be back in it. And it was a little bit different. And, you know, it's just a new sport to it again. But just watching the way that panned out, I think that's just made people so want to be there in the next one, which is this year coming up. So, yeah, I'd love to be there.
Just in terms of your game, what's improved? What do you need to improve upon to maybe win a major in 2020? Or just which aspects are you looking at to get that little bit, 2-3 more percent to put you right at the top of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing that's improved is my scrambling and my short game. I think that's been a massive improvement over 2018 and 2019. You know, I've always been a strong driver with a golf ball, and that's so key to keep that in my game and make sure that that's constantly a strength. You know, for the two aspects that we're definitely going to, that we need to keep looking to improve are my putting, my just simple conversion rates, really, just holding more putts, whether it's from 3 to 5 feet or, you know, 15 feet, trying to just convert a few more and trying to gain some strokes there. I've been good at bogey avoidance, haven't made as many birdies as I'd like this year, and that maybe relates to not winning as much as I'd like to. You know, there's a lot of things that go into it, but that for sure I'm going to try, and we're going to look at hitting it, not necessarily closer, but gaining sort of inside 150 yards a bit better, being more crisp and clinical there, doing that. And then I think, you know, just keep maturing as a golfer, getting myself up there more. Weeks like South Africa, weeks like DP World, they're good blueprints in how you were mentally in those tournaments and how, you know, you ended up at the top of the leaderboard. And I think just look towards them and keep working, really, and see where we're at. I've got an amazing bunch of people behind me. I've got a great family, so everything's there. It's just down to me getting on the golf course and getting on the practice ground and improving and seeing what we can do.
Speaking of your family, how's Franklin's swing coming along?
He's not really swinging much. He seems more interested in football and eating at the moment.
Fair enough. Yeah.
But those are two pretty good things. I'm not going to push him too much.
No, exactly.
That at the moment.
Just on young players, Marcus Kenault, you beat in the playoff in South Africa. He won the British Masters, of course. He looks to me to be a steely competitor. Any youngsters that you've been impressed with on tour over the course of the last year that you think might do something, especially in 2020?
It's funny, I think just, you know, golf's getting harder. There's more and more great players that are coming up and not being afraid to win, not being afraid to compete. And I think somebody like, you know, Marcus Kenault for sure, I think he'll have a great year next year. He's young with a great game, and I think he's got a mature head on his shoulders. He's got a great caddy and a great team. And, you know, it's hard to pick people, but I think there is a lot coming through. And people like Rob McIntyre, great game and such a good, you know, strong head on his shoulders, like older than his years, really. And I think I always like people in that, like that, really. You know, you see guys with raw talent, you see guys with great heads on their shoulders, you see clever players that know what they're doing. And I think, you know, there's more and more that are putting all these packages together and being more professional as soon as they come out. And when I came out, I definitely wasn't ready. I really struggled in my first year and I wasn't ready at all. And it took me a while to sort of get used to the standard and the courses and that. And people are just doing it straight off now, which I always find so, so impressive. So, and I enjoy watching young players come through, so I look forward to that.
Final one for you. When you last were on our review of the year, which was a couple of years ago, you suggested to us that you were going to get some hickory clubs for Christmas. Did you get them? Have you played with them? How difficult is it? And what are you getting for Christmas this year?
That was a while ago. I did get
them. It was?
Yeah,
2 years ago. Did you get them?
Yeah. Oh, I did get them. Yeah, I love them. Play with them. I actually went through a spell of playing with them, like coming home, because I was playing a lot. I'd come home for like a week and I wouldn't touch my normal clubs. I'd just play with the hickories.
Oh, but, my God.
If it was a hickory tournament, I wouldn't be challenging for any race to do by or anything like that. So I've got to work with them, but I massively enjoy it. What is for Christmas this year? I don't know, actually. I'm not too fussy this year. At least I had something in mind then. I think I'm pretty difficult to buy for this year, not giving any ideas away.
Well, we hope you have a fantastic Christmas, and we hope
Thank
you have
very much,
a
people.
Very good 2020 as well. Thanks for joining us on the Race to Dubai show.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Well, that was Dan Roebuck talking to Tommy Fleetwood. Nice to speak to him before we get to the brand new year, 2020. It's just around the corner. Obviously, playing in the Olympics, Jamie, if you're an English man or whatever nation you're from, now has become a big deal.
Well, British Team GB in terms of that, Robert. Yeah, you've got to be in the top 15 of the world ranking to really guarantee your position. Unless you're American, you get four places if you're in the top 15. Obviously, there's 8-9 Americans in that top 15, so quite a few of them are going to miss out. But currently, there are three English players within that top 15 who would qualify for Team GB. And Tommy would be one of them. And every nation will be looking at that. Outside of that, you only allowed two competitors in the team. It's only a field of 60, so it's quite a small field there to play in Kasumigaseki in Tokyo.
You like saying that, don't you?
Like you said, I've been practicing it. Have you noticed? Can you say it?
Kasumigaseki,
very
yeah.
good, very well done.
Yeah.
On a good course, a really good course, actually, long course.
Right.
But there's no tricks about it. It's just
It's all there in front of you.
Yeah, it's all there in front of you. Good track. We'll suit Tommy. We'll suit all of them, really. It's not a tricked up. It's not a lynx or anything like that. It's going to be hot. They're going to have to deal with that.
Yeah.
It's going to be a heat wave there and recovery and where they stay. I think the logistics around it all are very difficult.
And also squashing it into the schedule, yeah. which at that time of the year is packed.
Well, what was interesting in Rio was Justin Rose had pinpointed that event for a couple of years. So he planned it into his schedule. So when he got there, his preparation was excellent. He did stay in the Olympic Village like they all did. But when it got to the tournament week, he moved out, as did Henrik Stenson. And guess what? They finished one and two. Because it is a different environment, and you do not want to be sitting in a car for an hour and a half every day in your recovery time, especially in that heat. So the logistics and the golf course is a long way outside of Tokyo. So it's not going to be easy for the competitors. So I think if you're trying to get that little bit of edge, that little bit of gain, there's a few to be had there.
That would be your advice.
Would be my advice.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he talked about the Betfred British Masters and hosting it and how nervous he was turning up for the practice round, because he always felt responsible for the week.
And everybody's looking at
Everybody is looking at me. And that's an interesting dynamic for all these players. We just think, oh, they can just deal with anything. But it's not quite that easy. And he said he didn't feel well that week, but of course he's got to get out there and get on with it.
And he performed well.
Yeah. And that coast up down the Lancashire
Formby
coast.
Southport and Ainsdale, Birkdale, Hillside.
Further round, you've got Lytham and St Anne's Old Links and others, and it's just a brilliant. So it's got some great
golfing mecca, isn't it?
Oh, it's just wonderful. So great place to take the tournament.
It certainly was a fantastic tournament, and a huge success for Tommy Fleetwood, as indeed was 2019.
Yeah, it was. Well, it ended up that way for Tommy Fleetwood, but his game's going in the right way. He says he's working on that pitching part of his game, which I've always thought has been. Yeah, I did a bit of work with Tommy for a couple of years back there when he won his first tournament in 2013.
And he's never recovered.
Never recovered.
Never recovered.
Fortunately, he grew to his senses and got rid of me very quickly. It took him a couple of years, but he eventually kicked me out.
No, you're being harsh to yourself. I know you're very good at it.
I watched him actually at DP World, and he was on the range with his coach, Tomo, every day.
Yeah.
And then he would go to the chipping area with Graham Walker, his other coach, who helps him out with his short game bunker play and whatever. And then it was on to the putting green with Phil Kenyon. So I know he's got his stats man and my man as well there, Tom, with him. So he's got the whole team there, and he's not the only one. He was just observing him pre every round.
It's a
doing
lot of
that.
People.
It's a lot of information to take in. But hey, listen, you know, whatever floats your boat. Yeah. And it was just interesting the way he went about that preparation before he went on the golf course.
My team.
Team, yeah, they've all got teams.
They have got teams.
And they work.
They're certainly working for Tom. He's got everything right, and it's going well. And I expect 2020 to be a big year for him as well. So, coming to the end of the Race to Dubai shows for this year, 2019. But it was a sad year for many of us on the show because, Jamie, we lost one of our very own.
Yeah, we did, yeah. Gordy Brown Jr., who's worked on this show, two-time Ryder Cup player and my best mate.
Well, it's not easy, you know. Gordon used to trek up here from Bristol to take part in the Race to Dubai show, and he had the best top tens in the history of top tens. We used to love Gordon reading them out because they came out bass-ackwards, and the pronunciation of the names...
He could never get
ever,
it, could he?
Never. Bernd Weisberger.
Bernd Weisberger.
Weisberger. What did I say?
The thing about Gordy was he was such a proud Scot. He represented Scotland so many times.
Yes.
Like Walker Cup, won the Scottish stroke play and other things. But he spoke in a West Country brawl and was never really accepted as Scot, but he was so passionate as a Scotsman.
And
the thing about him was he was just a big kid. He had a Batman wallet, and his best thing was going to the cinema with a big bag of popcorn or whatever and throwing it at me.
Yeah.
But he was a seriously hard worker. I know he worked quite a lot with the Gloucestershire team down there, the county teams and other teams as well, and he was a good coach and someone you really want to listen to because his work ethic was second to none. I think he actually worked too hard on his game. And you know what? When you came back into the clubhouse with Gordy as a goal, I wouldn't know whether he shot 75 or 65.
No, always the same.
He was the same player, which and there's none of us were like that. Most of us, you knew what they shot and what they hadn't shot. But Gordon was always the same. He had a big smile on his face, and blimmin' hell, we miss him.
Yeah. For all of us, it was just all so sudden. When someone has an illness, you're sort of kind of preparing yourself, and then, bang, I got an email, Gordon's gone. I thought, I read it two or three times to make sure I've missed something here. It cannot be that he's passed away. It cannot be that he's died. It can't be. And I kept reading the email trying to hope I'd misread it.
Yeah,
it was the most peculiar thing.
I knew he'd been taken to hospital the night before, and but the fact that I knew he was still alive when he got to the ambulance, and you just think, well, if he's made it that far, you know,
sure.
You know, and then I got the text first thing in the morning. And it was the same with you. You can't believe it. And I'm sure all our listeners have gone through similar things with loved ones. So the fact that he passed away at a golf tournament he was preparing for as well, it was a shock for the whole of the Stayshore tour, who he was so popular with, so many of the players and the staff out there as well. It's not just the players, and I'm sure quite a lot of his golf fans as well. So yeah, it's just it just wakes us all up a bit.
It does. Life is very short. Enjoy it each and every day. And our best, by the way, on the Race to Dubai show to his wife Sheena. Very difficult indeed. Right. Let's round this show up. That's about it from us for 2019. We hope you've enjoyed the Race to Dubai show throughout the year. We're back next week as the European Tour gets underway in 2020. Really? Is it really nearly 2020? Remember, you can stay up to date with the latest news via europeantour.com and the official European Tour app, as well as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. But until then, from Jamie Spence...
Have a happy and successful 2020, everybody.
And from me, Robert Lee, ditto. We'll see you next time.